Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're joined this week again by JB, who has with him a very special guest, first-time podcaster, Pistol.
Is that how well I'm going this season, that you're just like, oh, I must be a first-timer?
Well, look, I've seen your rank climbs during the buys, and I just figured new Pistol.
No, it's a very slow climb, not made the ground that I've wanted to, although this is the bye week I'm most prepared for. So hopefully I'll come out the other side in the top 10K. Fingers crossed, it's going to be close.
Well, as always, we are powered by Code Sports, and I will read out my rank off the top. So I scored 1794 this week, just gone. My rank essentially stagnated at 6.4, not 64, please. Please don't think I'm 64K.
It's not 2021, am I right?
I don't think I was ranked that poorly in 2021.
What, 64th?
Oh, I thought you meant 64K.
Oh, no.
No, 64, okay, cool. That's fine. Oh, thank you then.
You're welcome.
But it's not 2021, you're right. How did you go this week?
You pipped me by 2 points, so not great, given I was hoping to score much better, but, you know, the team sheets were not kind. Proust not being named definitely hurt me there, given I was relying on him to get to my 18th, so I had to trade in Ware, which was fine, but not a perfect use of a trade for me. I guess it kind of worked out. I freed up cash now, which, given some of the happenings this week, will give me a bit more flexibility, so it might work out long term, just not kind of what I was expecting.
Yeah, we'll definitely discuss Proust later in the podcast. Before we get into that, do you have any Cancer Council shout-outs?
We do. We have a couple of Cancer Council shout-outs. Thank you very much to Chris Moyer, who says, this is my prepayment for a donut because of GWS doing it to us again with Proust being out. To Jason, who quotes a Beatles song. I saw her standing there. I'm not going to try and sing it on the podcast. It says, I've got Why just not? 17. No one wants to hear that, JB, especially people who are paying for it. No, you know what I mean? And the way I'm cooked is way beyond compare. So how can I trade in another? I saw Ware standing there. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate your donation. Rob Volpe has donated. Thank you very much for your generous donation. And Mr. Bean says, for refusing to listen to the valued advice from the Slack community and trading in LMAC, I will never be stubborn again, my esteemed friends. Thanks, Mr. B. good lesson learned.
I thought you were going to say Mr. Beast there. I was like, wow, didn't realize he was a long-time listener. That would have been a juicy donation. Thank you, everyone, of course, again, for your donations. And as we've said in the last couple of weeks, as we reach loftier and loftier goals, we're just so appreciative of everyone getting around the Donut for Donuts. So another successful year in that aspect. Still not over, though, of course. So very much appreciative of you guys. I've got a few Patreon shout-outs here. We actually had a pretty good week for the old Patreon shout-out. So
great.
Welcome to the new Patreons, Bridget Jolly, Ashley Vanderhorst, Norma Stitz, DRSE, William, just William, Tyson Hoy, James Prattley, Clinton Young, who, Pistol, I think you're getting acquainted to immediately, Clinton, and Connor Dolan. So thank you so much to everyone who signed up this week. Those of you that did got in just in time for the Dr. Supercoach Cup if you have correctly put your information forward, which is now closed. So looking forward to that draw coming out very shortly. So that's a good couple of shout outs there. So we have a prize league, Pistol.
We do have a prize league, which has unfortunately fallen behind schedule each of the months so far, but we have a winner for the month of May.
It's mid-June.
Yeah, I know.
Apologies. The site has been a little bit more difficult than expected,
but we've got
a retrospective May winner.
We have a big winner, actually, with a four-week month of May monthly score of 9,000.
Pistol. What are you saying? There's too many M's in there.
Yeah, there was too many monthly.
Monthly May month.
Score.
Monster score.
Reds, Coach Andrew, Reds, please congrats. Message Chizo for your prize on Slack.
Can I get one of these mugs?
If you win one.
We're not even eligible to get them if we win, though.
That's true. I mean, you haven't won one before, so I don't see why you would win one now.
I came second once.
Well, Reds has won it with a 9.705 across the month of May.
Huge month.
Just pipping Coach Lee of Supercoach Mish, who scored 9.680. And third place for the month was Cunning Stunts Coach Mitchell, quite being active in Slack, which we've definitely appreciated, who got 9.674. They were, far and away the best coaches of May. And JB, as usual, will do the lucky draw prize fresh on the podcast. If you could pick a number between 2 and 120, please.
Why can't I pick one?
Because I haven't given that a team name. So you can't pick that
okay,
one.
Okay, I'm going to go 40.
All right. The winner of the lucky prize, please message Chizo on Slack, is DRSC Watto.
Watto.
Congratulations.
Yes, good man. Very good contributor, Watto. There's actually a reason I chose 40, Pistol.
I mean...
Do you want to know?
No, it's okay.
Do you want to know?
Okay, what is it? Sure.
I just want... Because you're the mathematician here. I want to know what the... number 40 is once the decimal is moved over one to the left.
One to the left. Ah, is this a very well constructed segue to the Lawnmower 4.0?
It is.
That so is lads, brilliant.
Lads, Australian Autumn is here and gone, actually. This ad is old. Luckily, the sponsors of today's show are Manscaped. They are here to make sure the leaves are falling off your tree as smoothly as possible. Their fourth generation performance package, which includes their signature lawnmower 4.0, has all the tools equipped to keep you calm and collected through all weather uncertainty. Time to join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DRSC. Always remember, lads, when you trim the weeds, the tree stands taller. Now, I promise you that there will be a different alteration of that ad next week, because I think I've run that one too many times, Pistol.
You've run it almost as many times as you used the Lawnmower 4.0 as a hairy man.
Well, I think I've run it less times. I utilize that thing every day. All right. Well, that's going to do the housekeeping. Appreciate it. You know what? Housekeeping is usually 10 minutes. I think we were quite swift during that housekeeping.
Let's not keep talking about it.
No. Let's get two more minutes in and then we'll jump into the podcast. Sure. We've got a lot to talk about this podcast. There has been, I think it's fair to say, a little bit of carnage, but also just a little bit of information that has sort of caught our attention that we'd like to discuss. So we're just going to dive straight in. I've written down a lot of names here, not even in positional order or anything.
Well, that's not helpful.
I've just written names as they've come to me. We're going to start off with those who took the punt on Dane Zorko. I was one of those, Pistol, but I traded him out after he scored that 35 in a fit of rage, and I was regretting it a little bit last week, but as Zorko does, Zorko comes and Zorko goes. So a hamstring injury now, you would imagine, considering his age, it's the at least minimum 2 week injury here, and then he comes back for the last 7 or 8 weeks. So I think at this point it's safe to assume Zorko is a trade out. It's not like he was averaging uber premium numbers prior to the injury. Trade out option, and in defense, where it's, you've actually got quite a lot of options, and on his bye, so it kind of all comes up Milhouse when it comes to trading Zorko. I think it's actually a good time.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think hamstring injury or non-hamstring injury, it's probably time to trade him out anyway. So not that big of a deal there. The interesting thing is, you know, who are people going to trade him to? Because Tom Stewart is about to drop like 50K after, you know, in a fortnight, or 60K in a fortnight. So he's not quite prime. I think if you don't have Doherty, he's probably still, same as last week, the number one target down there.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, yeah, there's a lot of defenders. Not too many of them are cheap at the moment. If you can downgrade, I don't know what rookies are going to be available. There's talk that some rookies might be available this week, some defender options. If one's named JB and it doesn't clog up your D6 spot, it might be a good way to like redistribute your cash so that you could grab, you know, Stewart in a week or two's time.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't know how many people will be in that situation. I think people are generally looking at their last upgrade or so. I mean, it could be anywhere in the field, so it absolutely could be in defense. So, look, if you are one of those people and you can just make a little downgrade here and upgrade elsewhere and just wait out Stewart, I think that's probably optimal. Having said that, there aren't a lot of cheaper options because Zorko has lost a bit of money as well, quite a bit of money, due to that poor score 2 weeks ago. I think you're essentially guaranteed looking to trade him up. Essentially, there's only one option that I think might actually be worth looking at around his price.
Who is it?
It's Lachie Whitfield.
Oh no! Let's not do this again.
No, it's only because
I've got an option that's worth trading in.
No. Well, can we just? No. Wait.
I don't really want to let you talk about it, but go for it.
Whitfield just turned up for the first time this year. It was his first game under the brand new coach. I think, as much as I'm not trying to push this option, I think there's a legitimate discussion, especially if you watched the game, which I didn't.
Unfortunately, I did.
If you watched the game and Whitfield did look the goods, back to his sort of running best, there's a discussion to be made. If people were short of money and had to go with an option around that price, you could talk me into Lachie Whitfield. You honestly could. But I'm someone who traded him out in round three, so I don't have as much animosity at Lachie Whitfield as what you do.
It was... So I watched after quarter time, again, unfortunately. It was just a training drill for GWS. I wouldn't read too much into the score. The role was the same wing role. Yes, he was running well. No,
wing role was good. He was starting the forward line, which was capping him under Leon. If he had the wing role the entire game, that is an improvement in role.
There's not a large enough sample size, and it was against North Melbourne.
Agreed. So the sample size makes it very difficult. I agree. Yeah.
You can do it at all. I think if I'm trading in a cheaper player, I'm probably looking at Nick Blakey at 487K. He's had a role change in the last 4 weeks, and he's become Sydney's primary kick-out taker as well as distributor out of the back line. His last four scores have been 116, 106, 105, 102. And in that period of time, he took five of the team's seven kickouts last week. He didn't play in round 11. In round 10, he took nine of the 10 and Lloyd took one. And in round nine, he took nine of the 11 and Lloyd took two. So there's been a complete shift.
Do you think he's a better
shift.
Selection than Aaron Hall?
you can't put me on the spot like that.
He's only 9K more expensive.
Paul's got
Aaron
the
Hall.
Buy, so
yeah, no, I know that.
I do think Blakey.
We're talking about the rest of the season here, not just this week.
Yeah, I don't love any of these options. I probably would get Hall just because past history and how well we know he can score. I do think that.
I'd absolutely get Hall.
Yeah,
but you're buying the injury risk as well. But
yeah.
I don't mind Salem as a potential. But
Salem's really good, just as AFL footballer. Like watching him play.
Yeah, no, he is. It's just what May does to the kickout situation when he comes back. It's like Salem's obviously he's dropped significantly in price due to that first round knee injury. So he's just come back. What did he scored 83 in his return, but. He was on track for a ton until they got overrun at the end. 104 in game two. If Melbourne go back to winning games, he's a chance to just coast home with a 100 flat average. And at that price, it's not too bad. 30K cheaper than Hall without the injury risk, or the same soft tissue injury risk. There's a few players to look at, but essentially, I think you're doing everything in your power, even if you're spending an extra trade to do so, to trade up to pretty much anyone. Above Mark Blitzarves, Doherty, Crisp, you could talk him into Dan Houston, Jordan Dawson, Hewitt, Sinclair, Stewart, Sicily, depending on what you can afford, even if it costs an extra trade, I think I'd be doing that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
Even Houston?
I could be convinced into Houston, even if it wouldn't be my first option.
Okay.
Like defenders just aren't cheap. So you're kind of paying up regardless, which is...
Yeah, I think Doherty is still far and away one of the best value players in the game this week. 538K, only owned by 23%. That should just be higher. It genuinely should be.
Yep.
He's the lowest owned player of those big names. He's lower owned than Crisp, then Short, then Hewitt, then Sinclair, then Stewart, then Sicily. It's unbelievable. So I think he's a great option. Yeah. We're going to move on. Petrarca is the next one. Talking about downhill skiers and Melbourne in general, I think Petrarca, I know for a fact, was on for a very big score. I think he was on 74 points about 2 minutes into the third quarter, and then Collingwood just dominated, and Petrarca was nowhere to be seen. So he's definitely a flat track bully, and I think although it's frustrating having his last 3 weeks in your side, and he's very cheap. If I was looking towards a midfielder at that sort of price range, I would actually be looking to trade him in. I just think Melbourne can't keep playing this way. Where as soon as they turn it around, he averages 115 for the rest of the year. I genuinely think that.
I think he registered a clangor when he dropped the ball in the goal square on the goal line and it like trickled through his legs and he didn't score a goal in that. I think it was the last quarter or third quarter when that happened. And that play, so minusing points instead of gaining a goal, a kick, you know, effective kick and a goal.
So actually, can I just add to this?
Yep.
That was as soon as he hit 74. So he'd already got 16 points for the quarter for his five or six really good acts. And he was getting those momentum points, like you get the scaling because you're dominating so much. That actually happened at the peak of that. So he was on 74 for about 8 seconds before he got that chance in the goal square. I think he would have gone to at least 88, maybe 90 with that goal.
Yeah, I think he just that one play in that game cost him from scoring like 115 in this game. So
yep.
I wouldn't be talking about it if you know he didn't have butterfingers. He is definitely someone that I'm not looking to trade out in the flat track bully. And Melbourne really are too good to be this, you know, to keep losing. And I think it's been a lot of poor, no fault of the midfield. It's mostly been defenders falling over themselves and getting injured in the last couple of games that's costing them, you know, some wins. And they'll push through. They'll fight back. So I'm not too worried really about Petrarca. I do think there's, you know, opportunities if you're potentially getting a zero this week and you want to trade him out and you've got money and you can get like a lead or something, like I wouldn't talk out anyone from stopping themselves getting a donut by trading.
I want that to only be an option if you actually don't believe he's going to come back. Like, don't just do it just because of the donut. Like, just sideways a rookie or something like that. I think Petrarca, if you own him and like me, you believe he's going to bounce back and he's just had the worst run of his season, of the last two seasons even, then just don't trade him. I don't think it's worth the trade just for this one.
I think I've seen people float Petrarca to Zeret because it's, you know, only 50k, but that doesn't really seem.
Petrarca outscored Zeret this week.
Yeah, I know, but because he's got the bye, people are looking to trade Petrarca to Zeret, and that doesn't seem worth it to me.
Would you advise anyone to trade in Petrarca this week? Not this week, sorry, next week.
Probably not.
For their last upgrade. I don't think. Yeah, look, it's really tough. If someone was balling on a budget. It's pretty much him, Tom Green, Travis Boak around that same sort of area. And then you look to paying 50K to go up to the likes of the safer, I suppose, in quotation marks, Zach Merritt, who didn't even turn up this week. I actually think I do like Petrarca out of all those options. And if you were floating around the 550, sub 550 range, that's absolutely the guy that I'd be going for. Unless, of course, you don't have Patrick Cripps or something.
But Jack Steele, when he returns, will be 550 after, you know, a week or two. So depending if you can plug that gap in the meantime with somebody like maybe Himmelberg that we'll talk about later, that might be the play instead.
Will he really be 550?
Yeah, about that. Remember, he got injured with that 70 score, and the game before that, he also had a 70 score.
Oh, so wow. He's had back-to-back 70s. Look now. So his break-even's 192. Okay. And then he comes back, scores 110, goes down to 550, and has a break-even still of 135. Yeah, wow. Okay. I mean, that if you can wait out for that, then that is absolutely optimal. But if not, then I don't mind the Petrarca option out of all those guys, but let's just hope no one's shopping in the Audi aisle, I guess. around that price tag, Stephen Cornelio. We've got to talk about him. 174 this week. So that's two scores 140 plus since the new coach came in. One score of 85 that he pretty much had up until halftime against Brisbane before fading out. They've got a couple of people coming back into that midfield. I think that does quell his ceiling a lot. Definitely his ceiling. I think it also lowers the floor out a little bit depending on who is having the better game. I would not trade into him if I didn't own him. I would be happily owning him right now if I did. If I didn't own him, if I'd already traded him out, I think you just cut the losses of two of the last 3 weeks and move on.
It's a bit of a tough one because even though he scored, you know, incredibly well, and you, as we've said before, like you can't really get those points back. And it's tough because he's got a convenient buy for people that, you know, might be shopping this week. And he's coming off a big score, so it's like kind of, I'd say now or never.
Who are the two opposition teams that he scored well against?
No, I mean, he scored well against West Coast and North Melbourne, which is somewhat predictable against those two teams as well because they're poor. But you've got Hopper, who's 2 weeks away. You've got Taranto, who is meant to have some sort of fitness test, so he'll be 1 or 2 weeks away. It's the same feeling where I just can't. I don't want to buy somebody where I'm so unsure of what his role is going to be when he comes back. I know the coach has said, oh, midfield's his best role, but all coaches say that sort of stuff. It doesn't really mean too much. I mean, what's the coach going to say, Hopper? Like, Hopper is going to say to Hopper, yeah, your best position is the midfield. It's not going to play Hopper in the forward line. Well, probably not. I mean, he might do that with Taranto, but yeah,
Do you know what?
It's too hard. It's too high risk for me there.
I know Perryman's out for a little bit as well, but he was absolutely incredible in the midfield. He was maybe their best player before getting injured on the weekend.
Yep.
Josh Kelly has been best on ground for multiple weeks before getting tagged this week. There are so many players that can go through there. And if you've got someone young like Taranto, the previous coach has been fired. Are you really just going to play him out of position still for the rest of the year when you're trying to get a job? I don't know. I think Taranto gets his time in there as well. I think Hopper can only actually play in there. I just think it's interesting. I think it's a bit of a merry-go-round. It's something I don't want to trade into, but if you're one of the guys who kept the faith, then you've still got a premium on your hands. So I think you're also extremely happy, but traders, Look, I see it a lot in our Slack, and it's the toughest part in the game is to trade someone out based on a break even when you think there's a sliver of hope with a new coach coming in, but you just can't afford to lose the money. And it's so unfortunate, but at the end of the day, we make decisions based on the information that we have at hand, and you just can't beat yourself up over something like this, because if you kept him alternatively in a different universe and he did score 47 and played forward pocket, you would be livid with yourself for not making such an obvious decision against the break even. It's just so... I'm going off track here a bit, Pistol. I just see people beat themselves up over these trades all the time, and we're making decisions on a game that is completely unpredictable. As much as we can guess what players are going to go, they're only guesses. This game is still unpredictable. Josh Kelly was pegged in for a 170 this week. North Melbourne put their first good tagger on an actual player for the entire season. Why? So randomly, why would you do that when they still got smashed? Like, it's... We're making predictions on a game that is unpredictable at times.
There's things are bathed in logic, but JB, I think the thing to remember is there is 10 weeks to go. We are only, you know, one game more than halfway through the season. And these players, as I said, the return dates, even at worst case timeline, is like, you know, 3 weeks away for both those people. That means Cornelio has to still have 7 weeks with both of them in the team. That's a lot of weeks. Like, that's a lot of the season.
I agree with your Cornelio decisions. I just don't want people beating themselves up over decisions that they make.
It's so early. It feels like, I think because of the trades, just how often we're trading and how hard we're trading, it might feel like more of the season's gone by, especially that now we're down to, like, you know, single-figure trades after having 35. It kind of feels like the end is nigh. But speak for yourself. Sorry. There's so many games still to play. Like, it's just a long season.
All right, I'm going to stick with the GWS theme that we've somehow fallen into now. Harry Himmelberg, as a forward option this week, scored 187, has now had 3 weeks in his brand new role, playing at half back or fullback. Scored 80 against West Coast, where obviously he didn't see much of the ball. 126 against Brisbane, 187 against North Melbourne. Did have majority of the kickouts, but not a vast majority, just around 50%.
Yeah.
And obviously is learning his role really well. He looked incredible on the weekend. And look, it's... I know they've got a couple of ins coming back in. Do you have faith in his position like you do or like you don't with Cornelio's?
I mean, this isn't the first time that he was a defender. I believe he was like a junior defender, then turned forward and now turned back again. I think the key thing is that, like, Haynes was fit and then just wasn't in the team because he hasn't added much to the side this season.
Hey, no, don't even sugarcoat it. He's been really bad.
He's been very bad
this year. Very, very bad.
Himmelberg straight away was really good down back, like incredibly good. I'm, you know, watching the game. He was intercept marking. He was. I'm trying to think of who he played similarly to.
Dan Houston.
I hate to say it, kind of like Sicily. Sicily, Ridley, that type of player. I guess it was against North Melbourne, so the forward 50 entries were very poor and he was able to pick it off, but he was also really good against Brisbane. So,
well, you don't need a 187 every week.
No, you don't. And I think what happens with him is his price, while still expensive, he went up 85K this week in 1 week, which is remarkable. His break even now is minus 61, so he's 435K. If he scores an 81, which seems in this current role, seems decent, he's going to go up 63K. And then after that, with a 96, he'll go up another 33K. So we're talking almost 100K price rise in just 2 weeks if he's decent at his role, not if he's good at his role. So it just feels like a very low risk investment. If you've got the money and you've got the trades, it doesn't seem like a bad move just to pop him in and see what happens. I mean, for my team, which is a pretty good example, is I have about 450K to spend and I would have to use a trade to downgrade a rookie to a non-playing rookie at this stage, because there's not many playing rookies, to free up another 100K so I could buy a 550K Tom Stewart. Or I can just buy Himmelberg this week instead, wait 2 weeks, Himmelberg will go up 100K, Stewart falls 100K, and I've made my money up there. And then if Himmelberg looks bad, I'll sideways trade him to Stewart. If Himmelberg is great, then I'll consider sideways trading someone else to Stewart and keeping Himmelberg. So I think using that kind of logic and using him as a cash cow when rookies aren't making anywhere near, you know, more money than he will be, I think it's just like a low risk. He might go 100 plus, and then you've just got him for the rest of the season, and just feels like a solid play.
So I guess my question is, Phil Davis is one that comes back soon as well.
Yep.
I know it's not just Nick Haynes. I don't think they're exactly like for like. I don't think Phil Davis suddenly pushes him forward or anything. But I just think the entire dynamic of the team, for example, with Hopper and Taranto coming back soon, I know, oh my Lord, what is his name? Perryman. I know he's been playing in the midfield. He gets potentially pushed out of the midfield. There could be a chain reaction in which we see Himmelberg going back forward in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. Does that not worry you? I know he's already made money by that point, but his ceiling immediately goes from like a 187 to like 80. He hasn't been scoring that well as a forward.
Yeah.
He's scoring well at all.
I think you know if you're buying him that you're at risk of then having to trade him out, but at the same time, he's going to be more expensive than 435K when you trade him out. So you're still going to make money regardless. And then you've also got the added fact that he just might be really good and continue playing. I mean, I don't really think he's going to be pushed forward now. Watching him play, it was a very...
well, there's still three goals. So
it was a premeditated move. Like, the coach came in and he's like, right, these are my changes to the side. Himmelberg, you're playing as a defender. Like, that wasn't something they just stumbled into. This was like an active change that McVay wanted to do. So I would be surprised if then he threw him back forward, especially given how good he's been.
With that logic.
I don't think the role is up for grabs. Maybe the ceiling might be capped. I mean, I'm never expecting him to score 187 ever again in his entire career. But if you can get 100 average out of him, you know, from here on out.
Versus Collingwood in a week.
Shut up. I mean, if he's playing on Mason Cox, he's not going to touch the ball. Am I allowed to mention Cox? Is the Cox bound lifted?
No. It's close. If he got voted in, if he didn't get robbed of that trophy on the weekend, absolutely it was lifted. The Cox was lifted, but he didn't.
So the ban's not raised. So I still can't talk about Cox.
Not yet. If he backs it up this week,
then all lids are off. It's going to be Cox time on the podcast.
If Cox even gets a disposal this weekend, you can talk about him next podcast.
Well, I like those odds.
Well.
Oh, wait, I'm not on the next podcast, am I? This is how I find out.
Yeah, no, you are. Well, whichever podcast you're on next. Just one disposal this weekend.
It sounds great.
We're going to move on to Bruce.
We can keep talking about Cox. That's fine.
No. One disposal this weekend and it's all yours.
Okay.
Cox is yours. So Bruce is the next discussion point. Can I just hand the mic to you for this one?
If you're handing it back to me, I might have to go back and talk about
No. Bruce, please. You're a Bruce owner.
I am a Bruce owner. Just want to point out how funny our Bruce versus Gorn debate went last week, with Gorn getting like double injured and 70 and Bruce not playing. It couldn't have gone better.
It's like a 0-0 draw.
It's so bad. I genuinely don't know. We both lost in an argument.
Yeah, it feels bad.
Look, there's not much to say. Again, I think, but I'm not the coach, that Bruce is just so much better than Flynn. I mean, Flynn got destroyed in the ruck. Like, Flynn was almost worst on ground, which is pretty crazy.
It's a tough ruck duo to come up against.
I mean,
Goldstein has done that to a lot of ruckmen this year.
Well, the rucks, so the hitouts were 60 to North Melbourne and 13 to GWS.
Yeah, okay.
That's bad.
Doesn't look great on paper.
And that was with like GWS controlling the ball as well for like large portions of the game. Like, Flynn couldn't really get amongst it. He was He was struggling. Like, he just looked really bad. I don't think it worked at all. I'd be surprised if... I mean...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The good part for Flynn is that they won by so many points. So they might say, hey, no change, we won by so much. But he was not good, and he got well beaten. It just makes sense to me that Bruce
doesn't get named this week.
Look, if Bruce isn't named this week, you'd think it's going to be a trade. And then if it's going to be a trade, you're probably trading to Wits at this stage. And if you already own Wits, you're probably thinking, well, I'll flick English at R2 or trade to English and trade him to Himmelberg because they're the same price.
If Bruce is named this week, is he still to you, and maybe not this week, is he still a trade? The job security is clearly not going to be there. Yeah, in future.
It'll be questionable. It'll be like, if he's dropped again, then I'll trade.
Yep.
But he won't be, and he'll average 110 for the rest of the season. And yep, it'll be glorious. Sure.
Naturally. Okay. I think that whole situation is going to be interesting to monitor. But
he better be
operating
back.
Under the assumption that he's back this week, I think it's an easy hold. Operating under the assumption that he's not named this week, you just trade him as soon as possible.
The problem is people have Wits, and then they're looking to trade to like Gorn or Darcy, who... You can't really get Gorn now when we don't know what's wrong with him.
No, and you definitely can't get Gorn.
Darcy's on his bye. So I think Wits
is better than both of them, though.
If you had Wits. I think the move then would just be to play Wits in English until you know more information.
Yep. And get Himmelberg.
I think so. Honestly, you let him go up in price for 2 weeks and then you trade him to Darcy or Gorn.
Mills versus Laird for a lot of people's last midfield slot. I think this one's very interesting because it's essentially Mills has been the guy for a lot of the year. Laird has the better fixture run. They're both the same price. What do you think about this one? Because I think if Mills hadn't had a couple of just mediocre weeks leading in, I think it'd be obviously Mills. But now that he's had that sort of form and Laird has the better fixture run, I think it's now Laird.
That's an interesting take.
A hot take?
I think Mills has a higher ceiling, obviously, because he scored 200 and he seems to be able to score like 80 points and a half more than any other player in the AFL. And then sometimes he goes on to score 110 and sometimes he scores 200. But
sometimes he gets moved into defense and doesn't score well at all.
That's true. That also happens. Laird to me is just that, like, almost Titch-like in his consistency where he just racks up 30-plus touches a game, does his job, doesn't have a bad game. I mean, this season he's only had two scores under 116, and one was his first game back from injury where he scored that 93. I mean, he now has had one sub-ton in his last 22 games, which was his first game back of injury. That's one in 22 games. That's absurd how well he's scoring, and they're not just little tons. Like as I said, this season only two below 116. If you're getting a guy that's putting out 120 plus on a regular basis, for me it's just Laird then, with an easy draw as well.
Yeah, I think people would naturally lean Laird anyway, although the mill ceiling is so attractive. I think the fixture run just puts it over the line. I think Laird just becomes a little bit more obvious then.
Would he get tagged by North Melbourne? Because he plays them twice. Or would someone like Dawson?
Nah, probably not.
I mean, it's possible he gets tagged twice and then it's a terrible fixture run.
I get it, but like it didn't work this week, did it? I mean, Josh Kelly still turned up and they lost by like 10 goals.
I didn't really know what they could have done better.
No, nothing. But like, it's an unfortunate situation, but I don't think tagging is really... I don't think they should push out one of their midfielders to get Turner into the midfield to tag each week.
Horn Francis is getting suspended anyway.
Well, that doesn't...
So there's space. I guess they just bring in Taron Thomas, though, so...
You would imagine so if you're Taron Thomas.
Yeah.
No, I don't think we can look at that as a bad fixture for midfielders now. I think Laird scores well both times against North Melbourne, regardless.
Yeah, that's so
true. The next discussion point is Will Brody. And I think this one's super interesting because it's really divisive, but I think it's obvious.
I'm interested to hear your take.
I think he's obviously a hold, and I think he's still a premium. He scored 82 at the worst possible time for our mentality of what we think of him, because Fife came back and, oh my God, he scored 82. He had more CBAs. He had the time on ground, I think it dropped just a little bit, not even that much, but he had more CBAs anyway. He just butchered the ball. He had almost no effective disposals, especially by foot. Is that a Fife factor or is that just a Hawthorn factor? Hawthorn have been playing pretty well and pretty competitively in the midfield. Look, they've got Carlton, Port, St Kilda in the next three. I'll be shocked if Brody isn't turning up in two out of those three. I don't think he's worth the trade at all this week. There's a percentage chance where he's worth a trade in a week or two's time, but if you're trading him this week anticipating the drop-off, there's every chance he just goes on to burn you for the rest of the year. He's still an incredible player. He's in their best midfield. He might be... I mean, he started on the bench this week and is potentially, quote-unquote, the fourth midfielder. But even still, he had more CBAs. Like, you can't argue that it's his role is impacted. He's going forward. He's not. He's playing in the CBAs or going to the bench.
That's very accurate. I watched the game. He had 100% midfield time. Like he wasn't forward ever the whole game. To me, the role is fine. I mean, look, I don't think he played particularly well. This was one of the worst games I've seen him play. I mean, he seemed to not be the first person in the contest. Like Sarong seemed to be getting a lot more of the contested stuff, and Brody was just like kind of backup secondary guy, and that may have just been because of the matchup, because of he, you know, ate something funny on that morning. He just had a bad game, and he scored 82. As a forward, and I think that's totally fine. I'd be concerned if he actually lost his role. And yeah, he had low time on ground, but you know what? Will Brody has low time on ground games.
Yep, it just happens.
It happens throughout the season. He gets stuck. The problem is when you go to the bench that often.
So much, yeah, you can get stuck.
You can get stuck.
So many people have been getting stuck this year because it gets stuck on the opposite wing or in a pocket or there's no goals because it's been really defensive at times this year in games. It's been a slog, especially in Fremantle games. He might be the most prone player to getting stuck in the entire league.
Yeah.
So look, it just happens. It just happens.
If you were going to have less than 18 players, is he somebody you would consider sideways trading for? Let's say a top tier forward, so like an English or a Bontempelli.
So you can't possibly get English or Bontempelli without sideways trading a forward, is that?
Yeah, let's say you kept Canelio and you have Butters and you have Dunkley and Parker and now you've got Will Brody and you're like, well,
I'm trading Butters before Brody for one reason only, and that's, and by the way, I'm not trading Butters, but if I was in that exact situation, you're missing one of the top two guys, like Bont or English, I would trade Butters if you had the trade situation, etc.
But you're going to cop a zero.
Only, and you have the trade situation. Only because Butters is just prone to getting knocks. And it's now affected four of his high-scoring games where he was looking good.
He was looking good. God damn.
He was on 95 when he got the knock with about 8 minutes left. And then scaled down to like 91.
Came on, got the clanger.
And then came on, got a clearance out of the middle that ended up in a mark that literally just should have been brought to ground. That is, it was like an 8-point turnaround, and he ended up on 87 because he got brought back off the field because he was mummified. So unlucky to get that 87. It should have been a ton. Regardless, again, I don't want to sound like I'm just making excuses for him every single week, because that's what we've been doing. And that's why he's more of a trade-out than Will Brody is, because it gets to a point where a guy is just prone to getting knocks because he's so hard at the footy. And as much as I think he's still going to average 100-plus from here, and I'm not trading him personally, if I had to, I would trade him before Brody.
Yeah, I think if you're going to cop a zero, like I agree with your like logic behind it. I think if you are going to cop a zero, it's probably a different story though, because that's just 100 points down the drain by not making the trade. And then Brody has to catch up 100 on Butters for the rest of the season, which he might do, yeah. But he'd have to outscore him by, you know, 10 points a game over the last 10 rounds. And I'm not super sure he's going to outscore him by 10 points a game. He might. It'd be close. It's not like it's an obvious answer.
Sorry, you said Brody would have to catch up to Butters. It'd be like Butters catching up to Bont instead, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, but it'd be an offset based on the... It wouldn't be, because Bont and Pelly would be in both sides. So it'd be a direct... Brody would have to catch up 100 points on Butters for the rest of the season to come out even in those two equations. But to be honest, Brody might do that anyway. So it's not clear-cut for sure.
I'm still confused at that, because in both equations, you're trading out one of Brody or Butters anyway. So I don't know how they become against each other for the 100 points.
That's why we're discussing trading out one to Bont versus the other to Bont. Bont's in both equations, so they cancel each other out. But we can talk about it off the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah, please let's do that. anyways, I'm like shaking my head here. Darcy Cameron is the next talking point. He's now the 10th ranked forward this season. believe that? What is that? Oh, that's on price. Okay, that's on highest price. Maybe have I gone too early here? Yeah, he's not the 10th ranked forward. Okay, I've made an error. He's the 25th ranked forward on total points. But on price, he's the 10th ranked forward, so that's huge. Five-round average is probably... he'd be up there. So he's got 109 five-round average. Okay, he's sixth there. That's a better stat. That's probably that one.
Yeah.
He's rolling. He's on fire. He's made 100K on the season. Price at 519. Here's a simple sideways trade if you wanted to. I think the only factors are essentially he's on the bye this week, and Brody Grundy will return at some point this season, we assume. What do you do with Darcy Cameron? Because since this hot vein of form, he's gone 115, 108, 90, 130, 93, 129, and 103. That's not bad. I think the biggest issue with him is he comes up against Witts off the bye, and then the tandem of Sherry and Goldstein after that. So that's two tough games post-bye. Grundy potentially back not long after that. I don't want to anticipate a drop off because he's been scoring well against Ruckman all season, and he's just good at this point. But at what point do you trade him, or is he a keeper for the whole season? I think we just need to define Darcy Cameron a little bit.
It's a great question. So if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have thought, well, there's a chance that Collingwood just loses the next couple of weeks, no chance of finals, and, you know, they don't bother rushing Grundy back, and Darcy Cameron's a keeper for the season then. Given Collingwood's, you know, return to form and, I guess, easier fixtures in the next couple of weeks, we're probably looking at battling it out for a final spot, in which case Grundy is definitely coming back in the side. And unfortunately for Cameron, it's not going to be like a, you know, 50-50 split where Cameron can still score well. Like, it's going to be Grundy's going to be the major person in the ruck, and Darcy's going to be the major person up forward for Collingwood. And that means Cameron's scoring potential just goes from, you know, 100 to 60 real quick, literally. And he can't be a keeper then. He's got 4 weeks until Grundy's meant to come back. Maybe they put Grundy through the VFL if Collingwood's winning. Maybe they play him an extra 2 weeks. And then he's got 6 weeks, but he's not going to be there as a keeper for the rest of the season. Now that means you can either trade him this week if you're missing like an English or Bontempelli, or you can just hold him until the point comes where Grundy returns and then trade him, because in the meantime, JB, he's going to still score tons.
Yeah, he absolutely will. I mean, he's got that, those tough two games off the rip, which he might get sometimes, well, but he's been scoring fine. Like, even his low games, he's had a 19 and 93 as his low games. To quote the averages with Grundy, it's pretty grim. I know he had a 19 against Adelaide, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. I think he was subbed out for Cox or something that week. I remember Cox being the sub 1 week, and everyone was like, what the hell is going on here? And Cameron was actually the guy subbed out. And it was like, wow, that worked out. Maybe not that week, but essentially he averaged 46.6 with Grundy in the side. So that's not good. I don't think he goes back to that because I think his confidence is up. He might be a 70 average all of a sudden, but like it's not a holdable guy at that point. But I think you just roll the dice. You just play him until you can't. Yeah. You keep a trade in your back pocket on top of the three or four that you want for injuries, and that's what that trade goes to eventually. So it's a really good position to be in. He's gone far and beyond what people could have envisioned when trading him in. So fair play. Very risk adverse trade and worked out extremely well. So I didn't have the guts to do it. I couldn't even endorse it on the podcast. So the fact that it's turned out so well is a credit to people who went for that move. I got one more guy to talk about before we get into a little bit of a discussion. Jordan De Goey. I had to scroll down a little bit further. So he's 22nd ranked forward on total points. I think he was tempting people a bit. He scored the 112 against Carlton, the 89 against Hawthorn, which is right on the line. People were thinking, is he a keeper? Is he not? Boom, 62 against Melbourne in a win, thus proving that he's not a keeper this year. He's still got the role. It's such a confusing digression from digression. Is that the word?
I mean, I think depends I always what get you're going to say next.
Such a digression from what he was doing last year.
Regression.
That's the one. That's the one. I digress. I knew it was wrong, so that's why I paused on it. Anyway, such a regression from what he was putting out last season in this exact same role. So I think it's caught a lot of people by surprise. But here we are, and I think he's quite obviously a trade out.
I mean, I don't really know what to say about De Goey. I do think he's a trade out. He's, I don't want to speak too ill of a Collingwood's player, but he's not that good.
You find it talk ill about Darcy Cameron earlier.
I mean, no, Cameron's been way better than I ever anticipated he would be. I have high hopes for De Goey, and he's not been living up to them. And yeah, I'm not sure he actually is as good as he thinks he is.
Maybe not. I think it's been more difficult this year. Just because last year, I think it was just a bit easier because it was simplified. It was see ball, get ball, run, kick ball. I think this year, there's obviously a lot more tactics. It's kind of, I don't want to compare him to Dan Houston, but when Dan Houston was first put in the midfield, and I got all excited about this 106 average that he could get in the midfield, I think when things become more complicated, when you start getting tasks, when you start getting told where to run and what channels to use, I think it can just impact the scoring for a year or so while he still assimilates into that role. So I still think he's a good option potentially in future. I just don't think it's this year. He's clearly shown us it's not this year. So I don't want to write him off as a player. I'm a big De Goey fan, so I'm
you're
still
more of a De Goey
him.
Fan than I am.
I am. I am. I don't really know where it comes from, but I just like the lad, and I think he's the first guy that people sort of jump on when things go wrong. So I'm happy to fly the flag for De Goey, but it's just not this season for him. You have to trade him out, and
Himmelberg.
I think the options are pretty obvious. Yeah, you can either trade up to one of the really good guys that you missed out on, like any one of the Bulldogs. Even Liberatore, I would put in as a really good trading option this week, especially without Bailey Smith for a few weeks, updated midfield time. But if you can't get anyone like that and you do need a circuit breaker, I would absolutely implore people to take the Himmelberg risk if they're so inclined to do so. Otherwise, you're looking at making money to go up somehow or going all the way down and redistributing like we discussed earlier with that defender guy,
Zorko. Yep. No, good call.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for the specific players to chat about. I just want to have a quick discussion before we move on to captains, and especially before we forget captains again. Trades when full premium, what is defined as a good enough full premium to say full premium, and how concerned are you with bench cover at this point? So let's start. Let's start by defining a good enough full premium. A lot of people have fringe guys in their lines, and it's getting to a point now where people are starting to clue onto the sideways. If they haven't already, I was very aggressive about it at the beginning of the buys. But if you're now doing sideways trades, how good is your full premium, and how many trades would you have left? I'm trying to word this as best as possible, so it's like easy for you to just jump into.
essentially, it's not an easy question, so I don't think you're going to get an easy answer.
No. I think I've got something here. So,
shoot.
How many trades would you have left before you say, you know what, this is my best full premium, I should stop sideways trading now because this is too few trades to now be mucking around with guys?
I think you want 4 or 5. I mean, I think what happened when I was talking this podcast and said there's still 10 rounds left, I was like, holy cow, 10 rounds? That's a lot. I'm only going to have, you know, 7 trades after this week or something like that, probably 7. And I was like, that's not very many trades. So I really need to be careful with my last upgrade in, you know, how many trades I'm going to use to free up cash to be able to make that upgrade. And then after that, if I want to sideways trade someone like Jack Steele in or Tom Stewart, you know, make sure that I'm not using more trades than I need to in those situations, because finding myself any less than 4, I think I'm going to be in trouble on the way home.
Yeah, I agree. So I think it's fine to identify players that you don't think you're in your best full premium, trade them or sideways them till you're up to about 4 or 5 trades left. And if you're really pushing it, you're like, oh, this gets me down to 4, I think that's fine. But also assess the risk in your side, I guess. If Aaron Hall is one of those guys that you're trading in, I'm a little bit worried that 4 is not enough. So just I suppose assess your guys and sort of make decisions based on that.
And your bench cover. But assess your bench cover.
Bench cover is the last one, yeah. So I have terrible bench cover. I don't know if I'll even have bench cover come full premium. That's just the way the chips have fallen. So what are we doing? Are you willing to do trades down to 7 or 6 at full premium and then a trade or two to sort of strengthen your bench, or would you rather just have 6 trades and as soon as an injury happens, you just sideways them? It's a very tough debate. We have this every year.
I think for this one, it's more about the players that you currently have. I don't think I would actively make a trade in to like bring in someone to cover my bench. But if I had someone like Dacos and I could spend an extra trade and be able to keep him for the rest of the season, and you know, use him to cover across 2 lines, I probably would just make an extra trade to keep Dacos. But I wouldn't like trade Dacos into my side, if that makes sense.
No, I think you said it perfectly. Same with like McCartan or De Koning. If you could just make one extra trade to sort of do the upgrade that you're looking to do and get the cash elsewhere from another rookie that's potentially not going to get as much game time, I would 1,000% do that and try and keep one of those guys, especially if they got DPP. Just keep them rotating between a couple of bench spots and do it for as long as physically possible, because I think it's going to get to a point where we're going to rely on those guys later in the season. And they're just good. You could probably use Dacos as a loop with whoever your D6 is.
Yeah, I mean, you never know when you're going to get a spike game. I think there's...
If you've got Shaw or Rich, I think you could absolutely loop Dacos as much as possible.
Yeah, no, certainly. There's players that have just popped up at the right time. I mean, even Greg Clark, if you can manage to keep him, you know, on your midfield bench, that's okay cover for the rest of the season. You don't have to stress too much. I mean, I wouldn't be using 2 trades to try and bring in, you know, like a 90 averaging player just for bench cover.
No,
I'd rather keep trades and have, you know, Greg Clark. And if it's a serious injury, just use one of the trades. I think as the season progresses, you know, that threshold for an injury, you know, if somebody misses 3 weeks right now, they're an obvious trade. But later in the season, 2 weeks might be an obvious trade, and you know, last round 1 week is an obvious trade. So the bench cover will matter less as the season goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a quick discussion about captains, and then we'll close this podcast off. So what are your early thoughts? Or do you want to know my early thoughts?
You're the captaincy guru, so you go ahead, and then I'll step in.
I really don't like that name.
Well, you've done all right.
I have done all right. This week is tough, though. Very, very difficult. I think you're probably looking at Cripps versus Richmond, or if you wanted to be... I don't think I'd advise Hewitt versus Richmond. I think you're looking at a VC Cripps versus Richmond. You're potentially looking at a Parrish VC if you're keen. I think Cripps is probably your best VC shout, definitely.
This whole week.
I think okay. So. And then captains-wise, I just think it's one of the Bulldogs. And which one that is, I honestly don't know. It's probably... it's probably McRae or Bont or Dunkley.
Well, let me tell you, English, if Flynn is in and Pruce is out, I'll probably be captaining English.
Yep. Do you agree with the Cripps vice captaincy?
Yeah. Look, I mean, Doherty's also... I think I'd do Cripps before Doherty, but I'd consider Doherty. There's not... I mean, Walsh as well. I would consider Walsh. I don't own Walsh.
Yeah.
He's up there.
I think Cripps over Walsh still, but yeah.
Then you've probably... I mean, Mills is always a good scorer. So, I mean, it's not a great matchup.
It's just weirdly restrictive against opposition players this year. I think, without even tagging. So, I think, that's a difficult one. I think...
You go to Laird, is a pretty safe captaincy option. Even
against Gold Coast. I think Took is a potential one against Adelaide as well, but it's not a tap in. Like, Took against North felt great, and you could sort of ignore the low floor that Took's had this year because it's against North and he should go 115 plus. Adelaide is I need to look up Adelaide's history, but early days, I think vice captain Cripps into a Bulldog or Took. Are my best options this week.
I don't really like Wits either for those, considering again Riley O'Brien, I think, will be a good ruck battle.
Not having Clary O'Neill is very annoying, isn't it? Because those two they're the mainstays in the VCC options. So that's a bit frustrating. I think I'm locked into Cripps at this point already.
What about if Dusty is out, which I think he's almost... I don't know if it's confirmed.
Probably, definitely, yeah.
Short should get more midfield time, and last time he got a lot of midfield time, he did quite well.
No, I'm not VCing Short.
Fair enough. I thought I'd throw it out there.
I hope he scores well, but I'll just be happy to own him. Can I throw out like a left field one?
Bruce.
No, I think Essendon are one of the most open teams to score against this year. I think Sinclair is a good option as a VC.
He's in some good form, that man.
If you, for some reason, don't fancy Cripps this week, I think Sinclair could be a really good POD. But
yeah, or Brad Crouch. I think Brad Crouch owns.
Yeah, for the 73 of you that own Brad Crouch, and there's four of those who listen to this podcast.
Yep.
Good option there. This week is tough.
What about Tom Stewart?
I don't know if halfbacks do that well against West Coast. They just don't...
The ball's not there.
They don't see the ball enough. Maybe Tom Stewart in a wing role, but he's coming back from concussion. I think they're just...
He let him do his thing at halfback. Right. I think that's...
He could be. He could be.
That's definitely an underrated one, I think.
I want you to rank your Bulldogs. Let's say Bruce and Flynn are playing.
Oh, you made that a bit more difficult.
I think that's the likely result, so that's why I went with that.
I think I'm still going to captain English with both playing. I feel like he'll still get enough of the ball around the ground. That'll be okay.
Who's second?
That's hard. So with my thinking behind it is, I know Hunter's meant to come back in the side because Bailey Smith's out of the side, and I just don't know if McRae gets pushed.
If Hunter's back in, McRae's my captain.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. But as well, there's another wing that needs to be filled, and it's possible that they just play McRae as a wing the whole time, and I don't know if I want to risk that as a captaincy. I might vice-captain him in that case. I feel like Bontempelli then becomes like the safer of the options.
But he's got that shoulder niggle, so maybe Dunkley, but he's playing forward.
Dunkley's role's not good. I mean...
I think English is just the obvious one. I think English is the obvious one. Okay. Let's pray for Cripps, and then Dale, and I think Dale I'll just go Took. I think I'll bypass all of the Bulldogs and go with Took if Cripps doesn't get the job done.
Yeah.
That's my final word.
If I own Laird, I'd do Laird pretty easily.
Yeah, I don't own Laird, so absolutely. I would also consider that. All right. That's going to do us.
All right. Perfect. Well,
you love doing these outros, so go for it.
I can. All right. So if you have any questions, please find JB at JB_DRSC. Find myself at Pistol_DRSC. Find Cheezo with a Z_DRSC. Or our main Dr. Supercoach page, which is Dr_SC on Twitter. Otherwise, thanks everybody for listening. I can't remember if there's anything more I had to say, JB, but we'll see you all next week.
Cheers, guys. Catch us next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.